Hockey Central at noon is Hockey Central at any time you want it to be. When you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. He figured you could use some lucid, logical, coherent perspective in your life. You know, since your opinion's usually so way off. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Toronto Sports Radio. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
With the third pick in the 2019 NBA Draft, the New York Knicks select RJ Barrett from Toronto and Duke University.
That's no Porzingis reaction for the draft, kids.
No crying today.
This is who they wanted. Number one player ranked going into his freshman year at Duke. Led the ACC in scoring. Had one of the great seasons in recent college basketball history in terms of scoring 860 points in his freshman year. That is fifth among freshmen all-time in Division I history. You know, he really enjoyed the entire process at Duke. Said everybody needs that year of college to play Fortnite and go to Waffle House in the wee hours every time.
RJ, you already have a jersey. You heard all the Knicks fans in here chanting your name, so they're ready for you. Tell me why you're ready to be a Knick.
I've given this game all I got for a long time, and I'm just ready for this. And I want to embrace the city and embrace the team and everything, so I'm ready to go.
The Jeff Blair Show is on the air on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Join the conversation with Jeff on Twitter using the hashtag Blair Show or call 416-870-0590. Now, here's Jeff Blair.
As anticipated, it was a banner night for Canadians in the NBA draft, and given the way this year has gone, goodness, I mean, you kind of wonder what the World Cup might have in store for us this summer, don't you? I mean, you kind of wonder if this run can continue. A record six Canadians were chosen Thursday night, and yes, I know. The dude we interviewed, Lou Gensdorf, wasn't one of them. I'm blaming Travis McKenzie. I'm just kidding, Travis. He wasn't one of them. Four went in the first round, led, of course, by the number three pick, RJ Barrett, who we just heard from after his selection by the Knicks. And as you could tell by the reaction of the crowd in Brooklyn, you could tell by the reaction of those who were there who were Knicks fans, it was a very, very popular pick. There was no mystery to it. It's the only team RJ Barrett worked out for. His dad played at St. John's. His mom's from Brooklyn. Got family ties there. His grandfather was a Knicks fan. It's a perfect fit. By all accounts, you know, in addition to the family ties, if you're a freshman at Duke University and one of the most highly touted prep players going into your first year, you get to handle scrutiny. You'll learn how to handle scrutiny. You'll learn how to handle pressure. And RJ Barrett is absolutely, absolutely form-fitted for whatever lies ahead with the New York Knicks. But what about the other Canadians chosen? Leo Routens is our Raptors analyst on Sportsnet. He's a mainstay of the Canadian men's program. He's the perfect person to talk to, so we're very pleased to be joined by Leo Routens. Leo, thanks so much for joining us. I mean, look, we've seen Canadians go, you know, Canadians go first overall. We've seen Canadians go in the first round. But, you know, I always feel that, and it's great that four Canadians went in the first round, but you know what? The test of your depth or the measure of your depth is when you can get Canadians chosen in the second round, because now you're talking about separating yourself from a much wider collection of players, right?
Oh, yeah, and then also you think, you know, that a lot of times teams will sit, you know what, you're really, you know, going all out in your first round, but now as you've done a heck of a lot of scouting, right? You've gone into detail in that second round because you're hoping to find that gem. And you know, there's more and more pressure to find those guys today. So, you know, when a lot of people are saying, the guy didn't go to second round, sometimes that's a great situation. And also sometimes in the case of a Lugansdort who did not get drafted, that's a good situation too, because just because you didn't get drafted doesn't mean you're not on the radar. and teams are focusing in on you, but they just feel that, you know, if you don't get drafted, they've already made calls to your agent. And a lot of times there's deals done on the side to bring in a guy because they feel that this is a player that can make their team. So there's a lot that definitely goes into it beyond the first round, as you said.
Now, we know that Nickeil Alexander-Walker is taken 17th overall by the Nets, but he's going to be going to the Pelicans because of a trade. Brandon Clark of Vancouver was taken 21st overall by OKC, gone to the Memphis Grizzlies, and Dikembe Mutombo's nephew. And I'm going to butcher this name. Fondu Cabangela. Close.
You got it, Cabangela. Yeah,
Fondu Cabangela. And you talked about him earlier. Yeah. He was drafted by the Nets, who were selecting him for the Clippers. That's a lot of players going in the first round who are Canadians.
Oh yeah, and let me tell you about Cabangela. Here's an interesting story. This is early November. I'm in Florida with the Raptors, and my son happened to be playing. My youngest son happened to be playing against Florida State in Tallahassee. So I rented a car. I scooted up there. So the game's not even 6 minutes old. All of a sudden, this big dude comes in, and I'm going, wow. And I'm not exaggerating when I see – and it's not like he scored 100 points, just the way he played. It took 2 minutes for me to grab a brochure, go, who is this guy? And all of a sudden, I go, he's from Burlington? I've never heard of this guy, right? Who is this guy? So I what I did was I – a good friend of mine that's an agent – and I called him up and said, hey, look, I don't know what you're doing tomorrow, but if I'm you, I'm going to be sitting on this kid's doorstep, okay? Because nobody seems to know anything about this guy, and this guy is an NBA player. And that took about 2 minutes of watching him play. And I even went on the broadcast the next night and said, hey, folks, there's this kid out here that's special. So that was a great grab. For the Clippers, and he also gets to play with another Canadian there, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, so that's pretty cool.
Who of the players that went last night do you think has the capacity to surprise the most? I mean, I want to talk about RJ in a minute because obviously you know the kid well, but who are the players taken as the capacity to really surprise us?
Well, you know, one of them is I'm shocked that Brandon Clark went 21. This is another example where the NBA and their scouting are just so locked into stats and analytics, right? Well, how old is the guy? Okay, well, what are his measurements? His reach or his this or that is not quite what it should be. He measured an inch lower. It's crazy. All you got to do is watch this kid and look at today's game and go, man, he's good. He's good. He's the type of player that can thrive, I think, in today's game. Block shots, not at his height, 6'8", 6'9", maybe. He blocks shots that, most guys can't get. Spectacular blocks, quick off his feet. He's improved. He's shown tremendous improvement offensively, and he plays with an edge. He himself, I don't know what word to use, but it's equivalent of just nasty. And you need guys like that. So I was shocked. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. And the other one, the second row, Iggy Brzdikas, played at Michigan. And it looks appears that pick will go to the Knicks, so he'll play with R.J. Barrett. Iggy's a good player. He's a lefty. He can really shoot the ball. He's crazy athletic. He can come in and dunk on you. He's a big game player. Two guys I've seen for Canada that I love their disposition. One is Brady Heslop, a shooter. And Brady could miss 10 shots. It would not affect his 11th at all. He just believes he's going to make the next one. And Iggy's one of those guys that regardless of what's happening, good or bad, at the end of the game, you can trust him. So I think the Knicks fans will love him. And he's a nice compliment to RJ. So I think he's going to surprise a few people as well.
All right, talking about R.J. Barrett, it was pretty clear, I think, for a long time that he and the Knicks fit together like a hand in glove for a variety of reasons. What, as I said, when you go in, when you when you go to Duke and when you are a guy who is considered to be one of, if not the top freshman going in, you have a lot of scrutiny on you. And RJ's played internationally, of course. Rowan, I mean, there's you know, the family, rich basketball background. But, Leo, what is it about him that makes you think he will be a perfect fit in New York? But besides his style of play, beside what he can do on the court, he just seems to be the type of guy who will get it in New York.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a desire to be great. You know, he's got an unbelievable motor, right? So this kid, he plays hard all the time, and he just doesn't want to win the game. He wants to beat you. He wants to, like I said, this is a kid that wants to take your lunch. He wants to make sure that when you leave the game, you know you just played against the best player. And he's not going to stop until he gets that. And I think the Knicks fans will love that because, you know, New York's a tough place. Mm-hmm. The scrutiny is just ridiculous. And he's a player, in my opinion. And you made a great point. I mean, when you go to Duke and you're playing with Zion and, you know, just a traveling circus, he thrived in that environment. So New York is, you know, that and more. And I don't see him being fazed by that whatsoever. I really hope that the Knicks do some work and don't continue to act the way they've acted over the previous years and get him some players to play with, because he's still going to be a rookie and it's not going to be easy and teams are going to go at him. Although it's easier being a rookie today than it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But, you know, it's you got to have players around you. Hopefully they'll put players around him. And that's the other thing, too. He can play with anybody. He can be a star. But he can play with guys. He can make other guys better. He's tremendous at seeing the floor and involving his teammates. So I'm excited. And you mentioned the family. I mean, this guy's got, you know, he was born to play basketball. It's in his genes. And you see a lot of guys that come from NBA, if you want to call it dads, and his dad was NBA quality player, Rowan. They have a little something else to them. And it makes that whole thing easier. So I think that you're looking at a guy that's going to be have a very, very fruitful 10-year, at least, NBA career.
Should mention, by the way, that ESPN's reporting that Lugan Dort has signed a full two-way contract with the Oklahoma City Thunder, that he did turn down some draft and stash offers. So that from ESPN, so that would be seven Canadians.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying. You know, that a lot of those deals are in the works. You know, I think we got a great example in Toronto with Fred VanVleet, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the Raptors, you know, didn't draft him, but you know, they got him in the summer, and look what you get out of that. And you know, sometimes when you get drafted, you can't find the best situation for you where it's going to work. Remember, a team's gambling on you, and you have no choice on gambling on them. You just got to go. Whereas, you know, if your agent can make a deal for a team that really wants you, and maybe there's a fit there, and they're willing to wait a little bit, then you may end up in a much better situation in the long run.
I do want to talk about Juan Hernandez in a second, but I am the Raptors pick. But I'm really interested in, we haven't had a chance to talk since Nick Nurse has made it official that, you know, said that he will be coaching, Canada. Look, we have a better idea, certainly, of Nick as a head coach after watching him win an NBA title. And, you know, we've all marveled at all the stuff that he can pull out of his, you know, his bag of tricks. Leo, you coached internationally. How is that style going to translate on the international stage? Like, I would think that the creativity something that's absolutely demanded internationally.
Oh yeah, you got to have it, because quite frankly, I mean, Nick might not know his roster till, you know, 3 days before training camp. Mm-hmm. I really want to make this clear, Jeff, that when a lot of people say guys don't want to play for Canada, that's not the case. You got to remember this: one, their schedule is going to be brutal. I mean, from the time of camp to the time it's over, it's going to be lengthy. It's demanding. And you know, for some guys, whether you're a rookie, whether you're in a contract year, whether you're coming off an injury, whether you just need to rest, or whether you feel you got to do something else for your livelihood, you can't question that. And I think a lot of people do. But Knicks doesn't be dealing with it at this point. But it doesn't, like, nothing phases this guy. I mean, he almost laughs at it. Like it's a fun challenge. And that's the kind of mentality you have to have. And you know, obviously he's a great coach. There's no issue there. And he's going to find a way to work around whatever obstacles come in your way. And not only has he got that G League experience that helped him with the NBA, but you got to remember he's got an extensive international experience from coaching over there and being involved with the national team with Great Britain as well. So you know, Nick's finely tuned for this. So I think it'll be a great fit.
Do you need? Because of that situation, Leo, where you're right, he's not going to know his roster until it's actually probably until the last minute. Do you need to have, I'm going to figure out how to ask this delicately, do you need to have a certain number of really high IQ players to take sort of an internal leadership role because of that?
You know, I think there are those players available to him, and There's enough of them that have been around the game. And, you know, years ago I said one thing. I said, you're never going to have – now, this will change with the number of players in the NBA, but you're never going to have every guy you want available to you that's an NBA player. But you need a pool of players that have FIBA experience, and that includes your NBA players. They got to have FIBA experience. Mm-hmm. But they got to be able to play the game and understand the game. And once you have that pool, which is, you know, anywhere from 20 to 25 guys, then you can weather any storm of availability. And Canada's getting to that point. And if you look at the qualifiers, the way FIBA has set it up, I mean, I think the number was 36 players helped Canada qualify for the World Cup. So in that 36 players, you have FIBA experience, you've got NBA experience, and you got basketball IQ. Because these guys come in, they adapt, they fit, and they play. So, I think Nick's going to have plenty of resources, whether he has all the NBA guys he'd like or not. And sometimes it's not a bad thing when you have some of the top FIBA guys, the Euro guys, that really obviously understand the FIBA game mixed in with the NBA guys. And also there's kind of a hierarchy, right, you know, whether you like it or not. And you have a little bit less of that issue if you mix in, for chemistry purposes, some of the FIBA guys. I think Nick's going to have what he needs. And then, again, his creativity will take over from there.
The Raptors, by the way, with the second-to-last pick in the draft, their only pick in the draft, took a 6'10 center out of Miami, Duan Hernandez. Actually, I guess he gave up his last year of school, right, because there was Miami became embroiled in an eligibility probe, and he was at the G League elite camp, according to Doug Smith, anyhow, and that's what got him an invite to the NBA Combine. I mean, look, the Raptors have had success finding guys in different places. We've talked about how that was. You look at their run to the Larry O'Brien Trophy, and you know, Adam Silver sort of name checked them last night and basically talked about how that team was put together. And I know, I don't know how much we know about this guy, Leo, but where could you see him fitting in next year? Is he a prospect? And as we get understanding that we're waiting for Kawhi Leonard to make up his mind, what do you think is the number one priority for Masai this offseason other than Kawhi Leonard? What does he need he and Bobby Webster need to bring into this team?
Well, you know, first of all, I think that with this young man, with the draft, so I think what you're doing is you're rolling the dice on a big athletic guy, right? I mean, this guy's a tremendous athlete for his size. And in today's game, you know, that's a good thing. Whether the plans are to put him on their G League team for a while, and they've had tremendous success. All I know is that if there's a guy that's had a taste of a G League, whether it's a camp or anything, Dan Toltzman and the Raptors crew are on it. They know these guys cold. So if they're going to take a risk, you know it's going to be a good one. And they have the option to have them around, have them developed close by with 905. So, you know, they're pretty good at finding, evaluating, and developing when it comes to guys like that. And as far as we're saying right now, I mean, obviously, you know, it's hard to say, you know, what he's going to do outside of Kawhi, because that really is the linchpin, right? You don't know where you go until you really have them. But they do have their, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth plans. And this is a huge free agency summer. There's, I think, what, 70% of the league is a free agent. So I'm sure they have earmarked, you know, who there would be to as possibly replace Kawhi. And then at the same time, you know, Masai's not someone to just sit back and say, hey, we won a championship. No different than last summer when you win 59 games and, yeah, you lose to LeBron. You could use that as an excuse, say, well, everybody loses to LeBron. That wasn't good enough. So you can bet that even with retaining Kawhi, that Masai is going to look and see what kind of deals he can do or who he can sign that's going to make the team even better. So it's hard to say, you know, as well as I do, you don't get a lot of you don't get a lot much leaking out of management as the Raptors office. But I'm very confident that, one, they have a great opportunity with Kawhi, and two, that and even the profile the Raptors and the city of Toronto got from the NBA Finals and the parade and all that, Masai wanted Toronto to be a destination place. And I think he's got that. And you got a coach that I think every guy, when they talk to all their buddies in the NBA, everybody say, hey, you want to play for this guy. You're going to like playing for this guy. And so I think he's got a great opportunity to attract some good free agents. So now it's just a question of, you know, what's the fun guy going to do?
Mm.
And then everything goes from.
Leo, we appreciate you doing this, man. Thanks so much. Good to talk to you as always.
Always a pleasure. Thanks. Hey, and congratulations again. I was able to say it on Twitter, but not in person. But congratulations on the award. It's fantastic.
Thanks so much, Leo. I appreciate it. Take care.
All right. All the best.
All righty. That's Leo Routens, Raptors TV analyst on Sportsnet. And again, the NBA draft is over. We now await fun guy's decision. And of course, Kawhi Leonard was at the Blue Jays game last night. Basically stopped the game. It was great. And I spent the whole game basically listening to, I know Sportsnet had a camera trained on him, and listening to Buck and Pat or Buck and Dan talk about Kawhi Leonard. He's still in the city. He's still in the city, and you know, you get Kawhi sightings, you know, picking up boxes at Home Depot. Apparently that excited some people. And we'll await his decision. And that decision will determine a large part of what Masai Ujiri does in this offseason. The NHL was busy yesterday. A ton of rule changes ahead of today's draft, which we will have on Sportsnet Ontario starting at 7:30. Of course, a lot of rumors coming out of Vancouver. Mitch Marner, very much a topic of conversation. You know, Kyle Dubas, who has only said all along that he thinks they can get a deal done. Yesterday, sort of throwing a, I don't know if I'd say throwing a grenade into the mix, but being very honest when asked about whether or not the Leafs would match an offer sheet, saying that they'd have to think about it. That's 4 first-round picks. I'd think about it, too. I mean, clearly you want Mitch Marner here, but we've talked about how a draft pick for the Toronto Maple Leafs is like gold right now, given the fact that this team is going to be up against the salary cap for the next 3 years, with or without Mitch Marner. We'd all love to have him here, but they're going to be up against the salary cap with or without Mitch Marner. So... You know, draft picks are currency. Draft picks represent potential cheap labor. So yeah, if I'm the Leafs, I am thinking before I automatically match the offer sheet, or I'm certainly giving the opinion publicly I'm going to at least entertain offers of matching or of not matching the offer sheet. Anthony Stewart is our Leafs morning skate analyst on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He's also an analyst on Hockey Central at noon. And Anthony Stewart joins us. We'll talk about the Leafs. We'll take a look ahead to the draft. Anthony's certainly no stranger to that. We'll talk some rules changes as well. 10 o'clock, Jeff Passan joins us. He broke the story yesterday about the Tampa Bay Rays being given permission by Major League Baseball to look at splitting the team up and going to Montreal. Folks, that's not going to work. There's no chance of that happening. There is a better chance of the Expos, or I should say there's a better chance of the Rays relocating full-time to Montreal in the next 4 years than split games being played. The simple fact of the matter is, people in Tampa may not like to hear this, but the folks in Montreal are much farther down the road in getting a new stadium built than they are. That is very much a factor. That is what this thing is all about. This is about beginning the process of giving political cover to local politicians in Tampa Bay and Stuart Sternberg as they get ready to move the Rays. It's that simple. Maybe passing sees it another way. We'll talk to him about it at 10 o'clock. And Ren LeVar, NHL insider at TVS Sports, and the Journal de Montréal, he'll be along at 10:35 Baseball Central. Dan Shulman joins us. It's perfect. We can talk Jays. We can talk Kawhi. And, of course, because Danny's one of the great college basketball voices in ESPN, we can talk to Danny about the draft as well. So, ton of stuff ahead. It's the Jeff Blair Show for Friday on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Did Bob McCown just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. On demand. On demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Draft goes tonight from Vancouver. We will have it 7:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. Saturday, rounds 2 to 7, 1 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. By the way, it's just made the NBA draft take forever last night. I don't remember it being that long. I mean, I was driving back from the Jays game. I stayed for the whole Jays game. I was driving back, actually, with a friend. At midnight, they were still picking. I don't remember the NBA draft going on that long. I could be wrong. Anyhow, the NHL draft, as we mentioned, goes tonight. The Leafs do not have a first-round pick. That's as a result of the Jake Muzzin deal. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Leafs move around a bit in the draft. We know by now that this organization's scouting is pretty pointed, pretty focused, and it wouldn't surprise me at all to see the Leafs try to move in a position in the third round, or I don't know, maybe even the second round, to try to nab. A particular player. I would think there has to be some emphasis on adding another goaltender, given the fact that this organization appears to have lost confidence in Garrett Sparks, given the fact Freddie Anderson, you know, he's not an old guy, but he isn't getting younger either. And you would think that it's an area the organization would want to focus on a little bit. Anthony Stewart is our Leafs morning skate analyst on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. He's also on Hockey Central at noon. Anthony Stewart joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Anthony, thanks so much for joining us. What's draft
Morning,
day?
Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. What's draft day like for a junior player?
It's hectic. You got to get up in the morning. You got to brush your teeth. You got to make sure that your hair is all ready to go. My draft was in Nashville, so it was hot. So I had to worry about pit stains, as they'd say. So I had to have a couple shirts ready to go just in case. So other than that, it's an amazing experience. It's a great job to, bring your family and bring them part of the experience, right? So it's definitely an amazing experience. I had a chance to go through it as a first rounder as a player, but it was even better to go, as a fan with my brother who got drafted to Vancouver a couple years later. So it's definitely an experience that I remember, I think it was 17 years ago that I got drafted. So it's definitely a great experience.
What do you do the day of, though? I mean, okay, get up, brush your teeth. I get all that. But, I mean, you've got noon to 7 or whatever it is to kill. Do you do interviews? Like, what do you go about doing? Will teams call you and say, hey, we want one more interview?
It's not like the NFL or NBA. It's sort of, you do your most of your meetings during the combine. So you mm-hmm. sort of have an idea of where you're going to go. So it's a pretty hectic time because you're talking to your agent. So all the information and the news is sort of relayed to your agent. So you're just sort of, hey, what's going on? I heard this. I heard that. So it was kind of, hectic, especially when you're thinking you're going to go early. When I was a player, I thought I was going to go. They told me anywhere between 12 and 25. and I went 25th. So those 13 picks, I'm sitting there in the stand looking at my agent saying, hey, you told me I was going, you know, around 12 here. What's going on? So it's definitely, you know, it could be heartbreaking at times. But, again, I can't be complaining because I got drafted in the first rounder and no one could take that away from me. So,
did you have a preferred place to go when you were sitting at the draft? Was there a team that you really, really wanted to go to?
I'm trying to remember. I honestly, being that from Toronto, I wanted to go to the Leafs, but I think at the time they probably traded away all their picks as they were going for it. I think that was pre-cap era. I was a Montreal fan growing up also, so I don't think the Toronto fans really want to hear that, but I really wanted to make my dad proud and play for the Montreal Canadiens. He immigrated from Jamaica to Montreal, so I really wanted to play for the red, white, and blue, as they would say, en anglais.
How do you, as we sort of digest some of the rules changes that the NHL put in place, or the NHL general managers talked about yesterday, you know, it appears almost as if, I don't know if it was Elliot or Chris Johnson wrote that, it's almost as if the general managers took a checklist of all the bad stuff that happened in the playoffs and just said, let's address this, let's address this, let's address this. Let's address this. It's some pretty dramatic overhauls. But I mean, I'll give the general managers credit because I like the fact that they don't view giving the coach another challenge as the answer to everything. I mean, I hate the coach's challenge. You can have as much review as you want. I don't want the coaches to have any say in that. And I think anything that eliminates that possibility is actually a pretty good move for the NHL.
For sure. I think the coaches now are sort of, you know, using it as a tactic to maybe to get a little bit more rest or try to throw a team off the rocker a bit. But, you know, NHL is known as an old boys club and they're sort of set in their ways. So it really shows that they're being really progressive and now trying to make adjustments on the fly and improve, you know, make improvements. So it's definitely, you know, it's a positive sign, but, you know, we're not talking like it's 1990 here, where if you're reviewing a call, it's going to take 10, 12 minutes like it does with the IIHF, you know, technology. Now you can have a call, you know, corrected probably within 10 seconds before the refs get to the box to, you know, to take a look at it. So how many times have you seen now, you know, before the refs even get to the box, you know, it's already up on the Jumbotron exactly what happened. So, you know, you want to get the calls right. And again, you're not trying to alienate the refs, but the game is so fast. There's so many moving parts. It's really, really tough, you know, ice level to keep track of exactly what's going on. So I'm for it because it definitely, it's making the right calls. And, you know, you don't want to see a team like Vegas get knocked out because they get a 5-minute, you know, penalty kill because of a play that wasn't a major penalty. So if it can correct calls like that, I'm definitely for it and it's definitely improving the game.
All right. We spent a lot of time in Leafs Morning Skate talking about Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, Kasperi Kapanen, William Nylander and their contracts. You know, Kyle Dubas all along, his approach has essentially been, you know, hey, we'll get this done. We can make it all fit under the cap. It's all going to work out. Yesterday it was, you know, maybe we wouldn't match an offer sheet for Mitch Marner. And, of course, look, that's fair game, right? We're getting to the point where negotiations have to wrap up on this, I think, within a week. Or I just think they did.
It has to. If it gets to July 1st, again, I think he's showing his hand now. Because if you're a team now, you know that they're not going to match. Well, I'm going to throw out maybe a first-year deal, you know, for $12, $13 million where they can't match that. So all along, the bar has been set. Marner is going to get his $11 million. And, again, he's earned it. You know, he's made John Tavares a better player. But Toronto now is, they have a decision to make, and they have too many players making too much money. I think they're going to have to give somebody away. They, you know, not for nothing, but they're going to have to find a way to get under this cap because I've been working on it now. I'm not a capologist. You know, I have my grade 12 math. I don't see how they're going to do it without giving away a Johnson, without giving away a Kapanen. And you know, we've talked about this, you know, since October. I think, you know, William Nylander, he's gone. He's gone because they have to free up this cap space because they're going to have, you know, $33, $35 million committed to three players. And they still have to find a way to sign Kapanen. And they still have to find a way to sign Johnson. And, you know, those guys are good young players. And I don't think you can make them expendable because, you know, those are the future of your team.
How do you think that's going over right now in the Marner camp? The fact that that was made public. And look, again, it's all fair. It's all fun and games. I'm sure we will likely hear a return shot from the Marner camp today. I'm sure something will be leaked out to somebody. And as I said, it's fair game. It's contract negotiations. But yeah, that's got to be a shock to Mitch, doesn't it, Anthony? Because all he's heard is, all he's heard publicly, I don't know what his agent's telling him, but all he's heard publicly is, hey, it's okay, we want you back, you're a great player, the city loves you, and now it's, yeah, you know, 4 draft picks, we could do a lot with that.
Yeah, if I was him, I'd say, well, you know what, we're not going to sign the offer sheet, but, you know, we love Toronto, but we're going to sit out. And the bar's already been set. If you bend Toronto, eventually they're going to break. And, you know, I think, you know, the fans aren't going to be too happy if Marner misses a day of camp, let alone a game of the regular season. And I think right now Dubas has to find a way to get it done, because the honeymoon phase is over. You know, his next move is, you know, he's maybe got to fire Babcock, but pretty soon, if he doesn't do a good job here with his cap management, you know, his job could be in jeopardy. So I know I'm talking 2-3 years down the line, but he's got to figure out a way, you know, to keep this team going. And Mitch Marner, I don't think he can, you know, this is not a battle that he has to, you know, choose to win. He's got to give him the money, give him all the money, because he's earned it. He's earned it. Everyone says, well, you know, it's tough to pay a winger that much, but he's a winger that creates offense. Usually wingers, you know, that, you know, skill level are scoring wingers, but he makes his line mates better. So when you have a guy like that, you definitely, you have to pay a premium for that. So I know they have the comparables with Rantanen and Braden Point, but in Toronto market, he is worth the $11 million based on what they paid John Tavares and Austin Matthews.
Yeah, this is, you know, as you were talking, Anthony, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, if this doesn't work out, and look, I tend to think it will. I'm with you. I think you basically, you get Marner signed, then you pull in all your resources, you pull in all your advisors, and you say, okay, we are screwed. We had no choice. It was an enjoyable screw, but we are in fact screwed. Now we've got to move and try to make this thing work. But you know, one of the messages that has kind of gotten out around the league about the Leafs, I think, in the past couple of years is, well, this is the organization that's doing business the right way. It's a happy dressing room. You know, there isn't this, it's not the place where careers go to die anymore. And I'm wondering how, leaving Mitch Marner and his agent and the public aside, NHL players in general, what message would that send out? Would they understand the business of it, or would they look at it and go, my God, local kid, great player, you know, lights up a room with a smile, all that good stuff, and they're not keeping them? Like, what's going on there?
Yeah, Toronto, you know, it has its reputation, but it's starting to change. But the market's different from, you know, even 5 years ago, where you're paying your RFAs. You have to pay them a premium to keep them because they're, you know, they've earned it, right? So there's no way they can come out from a PR standpoint looking, even if it goes to an offer sheet, there's no way the Leafs can come out looking out, you know, looking great about this. They're going to be coming out as the losers, as they would say. So they have to figure out a way to get it done. So the positive part about this now is that, you know, you can fill out this, you know, your bottom six and, you know, some, you know, defensive issues, and you don't have to pay a premium for that. There's guys like Michael Ferland that are available. I like McQuaid, Wayne Simmons, Dalton Prout, Brian Boyle. Those are guys that are big, strong guys that can help, you know, correct those problems that you had in the playoffs that's going to get you past Boston. So it's not like they have to go out and find a number one and a top line center. They already have that. They have to find that depth. They have to find that truculence, as Berkey said, to, you know, get this team over the top. So, but first things first, they got to figure out a way to find, you know, Marner his money. But then you got Johnsson and Kapanen. So, you know, maybe we can have a powwow and figure out how it can be done. But I don't see how it's going to get done without a fight and without a big problem down the line.
Good stuff as always, Anthony. Great to talk to you.
Thanks. Congrats on the Jeff Graney Award also.
Thank you very much, Anthony. I appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you.
All righty. That's Anthony Stewart, Leafs Morning Skate analyst on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Hockey Central analyst as well. Again, the NHL draft round one tonight, 7:30 on Sportsnet Ontario. That's when our draft coverage begins. Merrick Burke, DeBrusk, Cosentino, Friedman, Sloan, Murphy. Coverage will include a feature on Brian Burke and the Sedins reflecting in the 20th anniversary of their draft. That'll be entertaining. There are a lot of stories Brian Burke tells well, and the Sedin drafting the Sedin story is one of the best of them. Indeed, you should be. You know, you should be proud when you pull that off. Rounds 2 to 7 will be at 1 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet 1. We'll have radio coverage from 1 to 3:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Dan Riccio, Andrew Walker, and Pat Steinberg from reporting
from Vancouver. And again, round one tonight, 7:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario, Sportsnet 1. We have baseball tonight. The Jays are in Boston for the Red Sox. You know how I tell you to light a candle? You may want to find a fire pit for this sucker to light. The Jays are in Boston to take on the Red Sox. Trent Thornton against Chris Sale. Blue Jays Central, 6:30 p.m. First pitch is just after 7. Blue Jays talk with Scotty Mack right after the final out on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, and as always, Tim and Sid, 6 p.m. today. They will get you going. They will have the latest on the NBA draft, the NHL draft, trade rumors, Mitch Marner, and a ton of things. Also a reminder, of course, you know by now, Bob McCowan's final episode of Primetime Sports will be this afternoon, usual time, 4 to 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 590, The Fan of Sportsnet 360. Don't miss it. Is baseball close to returning to Montreal? I think it's, frankly, closer than a lot of people in Montreal or maybe even Tampa think it is. Jeff Passan of ESPN broke a story yesterday. Major League Baseball has given the Tampa Bay Rays permission to investigate the possibility of a split schedule, splitting the schedule between Montreal and Tampa. The mayor of Tampa, who has, I guess, a little say in this, the mayor of St. Pete, says that's not happening. I'm not certain there's a great deal he can do about it. I could be wrong. Maybe somebody will cut him a check for the games that won't be played at the Trop. It's irrelevant, though. To me, this is all we've waited for 10 years for Tampa to get a stadium built, and they haven't even been able to lock down a place to put the stadium. This is all about giving political cover to Stuart Sternberg, the CEO of the Rays. It's all about giving political cover as well to local politicians. This much we know. Montreal's ownership group, potential Major League Baseball ownership group, has more money than Tampa's. They have a site for a stadium. From a distance, it appears as if they are much farther ahead in getting a stadium built. Even though there haven't been any shovels in the ground, they're much farther ahead in getting a new stadium built than Tampa is. All Tampa has going for it is an indoor stadium nobody likes and a very good team nobody will go see. Well, Montreal right now has an indoor stadium nobody likes, but I guarantee you, if the Rays played in Montreal, they would be attracting more fans. There's a lot of moving parts to this. It's not going to get settled quickly. But as I said on Twitter, and as I said last night on Blue Jay Central and on Good Show and on a digital thing we did with Faisal Kamisa, it's not about baseball splitting games between Montreal and Tampa. This is about Major League Baseball essentially firing the starter's gun and essentially saying first place to make significant progress in building a stadium gets a baseball team. I think the Rays are going to be in Montreal. I don't think it's going to be a split schedule. I think it's going to be a full-time relocation of the Montreal Expos. I think it could happen in 5 years. And believe me, there are people in the commissioner's office who want to see this happen. Jeff Passan broke the story. He's ESPN's MLB insider. He'll join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good show, good podcast. Subscribe to podcasts of Good Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. His snark is worse than his bite. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show for a Friday, June 21st.
Bren Lavoie, our NHL insider from TVS Sports and Journal de Montréal, be along from Vancouver, site of the NHL draft at 10:35. And we'll get his take on the Mitch Marner offer sheet rumors and who may be making some last-minute moves ahead of the draft, which we will have starting at 7:30 tonight on Sportsnet Ontario. Rounds 2 to 7 go at 1 p.m. or start at 1 p.m. on Saturday. We'll have that on Sportsnet Ontario and Sportsnet 1 and on the radio as well with Richo Walker and Steinberg from Vancouver. Dan Shulman will join us on Baseball Central at 11:30, which is handy because we can talk about the Jays, we can talk about Kawhi's appearance at the ballpark yesterday, which was the big story of the day. Kawhi Leonard getting up and going for a walk is a newsworthy event in Toronto these days. We'll also talk to Danny about the NBA draft since he is one of the college basketball voices at ESPN and has a particular affinity for RJ Barrett, the New York Knicks first round pick, the third pick overall. So lots ahead in the Blair Show leading up to Hockey Central at noon. We were only sort of half joking yesterday when Jeff Passan broke this story on ESPN. Shai Davidi and I were talking a little bit. Sorry, Ben Nicholson-Smith and myself were talking a little bit about, you know, one good thing about the Expos potential, you know, the potential of the Tampa Bay Rays being split and going to Montreal for some games. We thought it gives us something else to talk about in the summer while we basically wait for Bo Bichette to show up and then, you know, sort of wrap our heads around a team that will have Bo Bichette, Vladdy Jr., Kevin Biggio, and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Because it does seem like we're in that stage right now, that we're waiting for the next bright young thing to come along. It's an intriguing story. I think it's way more layered than a lot of people think. Jeff Passan broke the story. He is ESPN's MLB insider, and Jeff Passan joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Great work, Mr. Passan. Got a lot of people in this country excited. Got a lot of people in Montreal really excited. Before we kind of delve into it, let me just ask you this on a very, sort of a very, very simplistic level. Is Montreal closer to getting a Major League Baseball team full-time this morning than it was a week ago?
A simple question. I gave simple answer. Yes.
Very simple. I
like simple. I mean, they taught us simplicity and brevity, right?
That's right. And our editors kept ramming that through our head. Yeah. You know, and I fired off a text to somebody in the commissioner's office yesterday, and that person said, look, let me just tell you this. He said, people in Montreal are closer to getting a new stadium than the people in Tampa are. Right now, Tampa has an old dome stadium that not many people are going to. Well, Montreal's got an old dome stadium that doesn't have a team either. But the point was that
funny enough, more people are actually going to that stadium than they are to Tropicana Field.
That's very true. But the point was that, people kind of need to wrap their head around the idea that Montreal is not a complete outlier, that this just isn't Rob Manfred spitballing anymore. And I don't think it is.
No. The thing about this, and I'm glad you made this point, is that right now for the Rays, Montreal is a more viable market than the Tampa Bay area. That is a plain and simple fact. They can have a stadium built there. I think, until the ink's dry, I don't trust anything when it comes to Montreal and baseball. Mm-hmm. But it looks like they can have a stadium built in pretty quick order if they really had some sort of memorandum of understanding in place that said, we're going to have a baseball team here. So I think that because of the plug-and-play aspect of it, Montreal is a really appealing place for people who are looking to move with partners or potentially an expansion franchise. And the most interesting part of this to me, Jeff, is that Stephen Bronfman and Mitch Garber support the half-season plan.
Mm-hmm.
What does that tell you?
Yeah. It tells me that
they're either so eager to have a team come back to Montreal, or, and this is the likelier part, I think, they feel like the greatest ability to succeed financially is going to come through that shorter, that half season of home games,
mm-hmm.
which is a really, really interesting concept. I mean, like, incredibly interesting, and something that I think is worth paying attention to across baseball and maybe even into other sports, because, you know, if Pandora's box opens on this one, man, you wonder if you're going to start seeing other franchises do this.
Well, and yeah, there's a couple of other things that work here, and I this is not an original thought in my part, but I had somebody actually with the Blue Jays front office suggest this to me yesterday. They said, you know, here's the thing: if there was nothing, if there was sort of nothing to this, if there wasn't something at the end for Montreal, you know, if you were going to have a split market and you were Tampa, why wouldn't you go to Charlotte? Or, you know, I mean, you're not, it's not like you're going to have a, you know, you don't have the 40,000 seat stadium, but you could probably fix up a nice minor league ballpark. And, you know, I'll tell you what, 20, 25,000 people in Charlotte, better than 4,000 at Tampa Bay. This guy's point was there are a lot of places you could sort of try to partner with. And yep. The fact they chose Montreal is telling. Like, this doesn't seem to me to be a move you just do temporarily, right?
That's, yeah, and you know what? Like, the outright dismissal of this idea by the unwashed masses who saw this on Twitter for the first time yesterday. And let me tell you, man, it's really funny when a story blows up in 2019. Like, seeing that thing happen in real time and seeing the reactions to it was pretty hysterical. I believe that there is absolutely an element of saber rattling to this, mm-hmm. by the Rays. I also think that Major League Baseball would not have approved their ability to go and look into this plan without a promise that it is serious. Because let's say hypothetically, either the deal falls apart or a city in the Tampa Bay area steps up and says, hey, we'll give you X amount of dollars if you build your ballpark here, and they go there. Do you really think the respected people in charge of the potential Montreal bid are going to take kindly to that? Mm. I understand that cities have been used as pawns in the past, but man, Montreal's been through a lot. And the idea that Major League Baseball again is going to screw it over, I just have trouble believing that that's the case, because man, that would be wicked and nefarious and awful.
And I don't think, look, I'm not going to make it sound as if Rob Manfred is an avenging angel or anything, but I think he's, there is a part of Rob Manfred, and I talked to Donald Fehr about this. Rob Manfred's a bit of an internationalist, right? He's got baseball going to London. Yeah. He supported the World Baseball Classic. When he says, yeah, I'd like to see the footprint expanded, I'd like to see baseball elsewhere, he's not talking about Tuesday, but I think he's dead serious about it.
I think that is a very astute read of the situation. And one of the more interesting aspects to me is how the Toronto Blue Jays would potentially respond to this. let's remember, when the Expos went away, all of Canada became the Blue Jays territory.
Mm-hmm.
And territorial rights are an exceedingly closely guarded, difficult thing to navigate. We look down in Washington and Baltimore right now. You know, they thought that the Masson deal was in Masson. That's Mid-Atlantic Sports Network. It's the TV station that broadcasts both teams. They thought the Masson deal was going to placate everybody. Instead, they've been fighting over revenues for, you know, close to a decade at this point now. And when you move a team into someone else's territory, you run the risk of that happening again.
It's also, you know, we mentioned the name Mitch Garber, who will be part of the, a large part of the Montreal ownership group. I've known Mitch for years. He actually hosted a radio show in Montreal, an overnight radio show while he was in cutting his teeth as a lawyer. I mean, what kind of
overnight radio are we talking?
Sports about? Talk radio, man. He was on with me. He, Mitch Melnick, and myself, and Elliot Price, man. We were like the, in some cases, I think we called ourselves the four horsemen of the Exposopolis or something like that. But we're on the air. We're on the air all the time. And he's a longtime baseball fan. His uncle was a lawyer who represented a lot of Expos players, you know, when it came to car leases, apartments, condos, things that, they didn't have condos back then, but immigration issues, things of that nature.
That's the thing, man. This is really being kept in the family, right? The fact
that
you have a Brossman at the front of this, and then all the connections that you just said, and I keep going back to this, Jeff. I think it's really telling that this is the plan that they believe is right.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing I was going to say too about Mitch's background is, you know, he was an online gaming lawyer, and he was one of the first people who started realizing there was money to be made in that. I mean, he basically worked for Caesars Entertainment, saved it from bankruptcy, you know, merged Caesars Acquisition Company and Caesars Entertainment. And my point being, if you are Major League Baseball and you know that you're about to step into the great world of gaming, of legalized gambling, and you can have a guy, part of your group, who gets this.
That's a great, that is a spectacular point.
You know, and it's like I get fired up about it because it's baseball in Montreal. But I know these guys; these are serious guys. And frankly, they got more money than Charles Bronfman did when he ran the team. It's not even close.
Yes, they do. And I'll tell you something. Like, we're talking about the Montreal part of this because you're in Canada and because this is a Canadian radio station. This isn't going to come down to what Montreal wants. Montreal can get this done tomorrow. The viability of this plan is completely in the hands of officials, elected officials in Florida. And they, you know, the conundrum for me here when looking at this story is it's conundrums, because number one, I find the idea of publicly funded stadiums to be abhorrent.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, I grew up in Cleveland and I had a team that I loved move. And that was that was hard as a sports fan, as a 13-year-old, to come to grips with. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe I was 15 at that time. I don't know what I was. Either way, it was the middle of puberty, acne all over my face, the freaking Browns are moving. Like, just a terrible time. So the idea that there could be a team moving involved in here, if a publicly funded stadium doesn't get built, for me, this is the greatest story of cognitive dissonance possible, because I want Tampa Bay to be able to prove itself as a baseball market, which it has not been able to do for like the 22 years that the Rays have been around. I also understand completely why they don't want to spend the money on a stadium. And you almost wonder if having the secondary revenue stream in Montreal gives Stuart Sternberg a greater capacity to expand the capital he's putting forth into the Tampa Bay Stadium.
The notion of splitting games. I mean, one of the impediments, you know, I'm not going to bother with what the mayor of St. Pete said, to be honest, but one of the impediments would seem to be Jeff.
And it bothers. Let me tell you something. The reporting on this story, or more the reaction of journalists, actually really bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
Outright dismissal at the start because it was a foreign idea, and outright acceptance of politicians bloviating. Like, if somebody says we're not going to consider something, and considering something actually would be the optimal outcome in the situation, do you really believe he's not going to consider something, or do you think he's just negotiating? Do you think he's just trying to stake out his position and get a little bit of leverage? Because that's what good negotiators do.
I was going to say, could you get – what do you think the Players Association, how they would respond to this?
I think they would respond to this like they do everything. They put a fuss up about it, and then if a couple $100,000 extra is thrown their way, they'd be like, no, okay, no big deal. I mean, it's like the inconvenience factor. Yeah, it kind of sucks to up and move halfway through the year. You're also going to Montreal in the summer, which is like one of the five greatest places in the world for any particular season.
Right.
Like, right?
Yep. Yeah.
If ball players who are making at minimum $500,000 want to complain about being inconvenienced, I've got a tiny violin and a concerto worth of songs.
So what's the next step here, do you think? Where does this go from here? We know that Stu Sternberg is going to have a news conference Tuesday at the Daly Museum, which is interesting. It's an interesting site for it. First of all, it's a great museum. Secondly, you're not holding it at your own ballpark, so if you want to read something into it, go ahead and do it. But where does this go next, do you think? What's the next step to this becoming realized?
I think they need to figure out just how viable the Tampa Bay area is. What sort of ball St. Petersburg is willing to play. And I think they have that. That's going to be the greatest impediment before anything. I think if they can get that lined up, the rest of it can theoretically fall into place.
Mm-hmm.
Because look, they have not had, to my knowledge, have they back-channeled with them? I mean, clearly you would think that back-channeling has gone on between the Rays and Bronfman and Garber.
Right.
That just makes too much sense when they when they share this idea. When there's talk of a limited partnership for the guys in Montreal, like, I think the Rays would not have taken this idea to the executive council the way that they did if they didn't think at least part of it was a cinch. And that part of it that's a cinch is Montreal.
I don't think Stuart Sternberg doesn't strike me as the type of guy who wastes his time.
No, he is not a willy-nilly guy at all.
Yeah.
And look, you own the Rays for a long time, and you become this completely, well, not completely data-driven, but this completely progressive organization that runs things almost like it's Six Sigma. Just incredibly efficiently. And this is the one part of the game they have not been able to tackle.
Right.
Like, they have not figured out
need to draw people to that ballpark.
Mr. Passan, we're going to let you run. Great reporting, great story, and great insight. Thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks, buddy. Great talking.
Talk to you. Jeff Passan, MLB insider with ESPN. It's a terrific story. And yeah, and you know, again, I sometimes I feel like I'm too close to this story in a lot of ways, but I think it's going to happen. I think there'll be baseball in Montreal in 4 or 5 years. I think we'll get a stadium built. And again, I know the parties involved, and it's a different world, you know, sort of being part of how the original Expos ended up moving to Washington, and sort of being able to follow that gradual, you know, the gradual cutting away of threads on an almost daily basis. I kept getting back to one fact. It really, I'm not talking about Claude Brochu or Jeffrey Loria. When it came time to make a call on whether or not Montreal would get a new downtown stadium built, when, you know, all the talking was done, the planning was done, the architect's plans are drawn up, all that stuff. When it came time for somebody, the provincial government, to stand up and not cut a check, but to stand up and champion the cause, no one did it. Montreal's business community, it was a very piecemeal thing. There were a bunch of little, you know, I shouldn't say little owners. I don't want to diminish the importance of the people, but there were a bunch of people who put a little bit of money in the team, and Jeffrey Loria put a little bit more than everybody else did into the team. There was no provincial government support. There was nobody to champion it. The city was kind of wishy-washy. I mean, the federal government at this point is not in the question. Look, Quebec City's got an empty NHL arena sitting there, so I cannot imagine that the Quebec government will sit down and cut Messieurs Garber and Bronfman, whoever else is involved. Like, they won't sit down and cut, here's $500 million, we'll help you build a stadium. But there's a political willingness to entertain things that might help get the stadium built, infrastructure projects. There's a comfort level with the ownership group. And this is another thing that needs to be said about Mitch Garber. As someone who was CEO of Cirque du Soleil, Mitch Garber is very, very comfortable moving and working in the French-Canadian milieu. His wife is French-Canadian, I believe. You know, he's a staple. He's on the Quebecois version of Dragon's Den. So we're talking someone who is very comfortable in the Quebecois milieu, is very well known. And that is a little bit of a different element to this than what we saw in the previous ownership group, where Jeffrey Loria wasn't. I mean, Jeffrey Loria was an art dealer from New York. He was an American. And I don't think he understood, nor could he be expected to understand, the sensibilities in Montreal, the sensibilities in Quebec, whereas Mitch Garber does. So there is a much deeper, move here. You know, the roots of this plan are much, much deeper and watered much better than the things that were happening in Montreal previously. It's going to be a great story to follow. And as I've said, I fully believe that in 5 years, I'll be sitting at Olympic Stadium watching a baseball game, or I'll be sitting at a new stadium in Montreal watching a baseball game. You know, I'm not certain the Expos or whatever they're going to be called would be in the same division as the Blue Jays. That's a lot more complicated than people think. But there will be a major league team back in Montreal. I'm at this point, as I've said all along, I've gone thinking it'll never happen in my lifetime to thinking it'll happen in 10 years. Thinking it'll happen maybe 6 years. Now I think we're at the point where we could see baseball back in Montreal within a couple of years and on a full-time basis. And on a full-time basis within 4 or 5 years. Ren Lavoie, speaking of Montreal, our NHL insider with TVA Sports and the Journal de Montréal. Ren, in case you don't know, well, A, he's a baseball fan. You already know that if you've listened to this show. But secondly, he was actually a host on some of the TV, the French-language Blue Jays telecasts before his gig with TVA Sports and the Journal de Montréal. He's in Vancouver for the NHL draft. Ren Lavoie will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to a Tim, and we'll give you a Sid absolutely free. Tim and Sid podcast available at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Shulman's going to join Kevin Barker, myself, in Baseball Central at 11:30. Kind of kill two birds with one stone. Talk about the Blue Jays. Talk about Kawhi Leonard's big night out at the ballpark. My God, I haven't had that much fun on Twitter since Colby Rasmus last played for the Blue Jays. That'll probably be it for me on Twitter, though, I think. I think I might shut it down. I say that all the time. It might happen. But I'm going to go out with a splash when I go out on Twitter. Anyhow, Baseball Central at 11 o'clock. Kevin Barker joining me. Your Blue Jays in Boston. As I said, never mind lighting a candle. Find a fire pit. Jays are in Boston. Then it's on to Yankee Stadium. What could go wrong, right? Trent Thornton against Chris Sale tonight. Jays a walk-off winner last night. 7-5 over the Angels in 10 innings. This just in from the blind squirrel department, Billy McKinney, hitting a walk-off home run to put the Jays over the Angels 7-5. So we'll have a lot to talk about with Mr. Barker when he joins us. The NHL draft will go tonight. The NHL draft presented by Adidas on Sportsnet. First round is at 7:30 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. Saturday rounds 2 to 7 will be on from 1 p.m. starting at 1 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. There will be radio coverage as well from 1 to 3:30 p.m. tomorrow from Vancouver on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Dan Riccio, Andrew Walker, and Pat Steinberg. So like a tag team of Vancouver and Calgary guys, they'll be hosting it from 1 o'clock to 3:30 tomorrow. And then we'll get you set for Blue Jays baseball with our radio and TV pregame at 3:30. First pitch tomorrow is just after 4 p.m. We talked about the NHL draft. The Toronto Maple Leafs in the news yesterday because general manager Kyle Dubas suggested, no, he didn't suggest, he said that the organization may in fact not match an offer sheet if one is extended to Mitch Marner. Saber rattling, perhaps. But I don't know. If you are the Toronto Maple Leafs, you have a lot of serious cap issues. And at some point, somebody's not going to be. At some point, you are going to have to get rid of one of Nylander, Kapanen, Matthews, and Marner. You just are. It ain't going to work out any other way. One of them's going to have to go. The question is, if you know one of them's going to have to go, where do you get the maximum return? And if you're the Leafs, I don't know, maybe the draft picks maximize return. I mean, I can't imagine Mitch Marner not being here. I can't imagine the reaction. It'd be great for sports talk radio, but I cannot imagine the reaction if Marner isn't here. Ren Lavoie, our NHL insider with TVA Sports and the Journal de Montréal. Ren Lavoie joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Ren, there's so many ways we could go with this. I do want to talk about the draft, but I do want to start out by asking you about this, the idea that the Maple Leafs might not match an offer sheet for Mitch Marner. How realistic
do you think it is? Because we know that every year we talk about offer sheets. Is this the year one's going to happen? And at the end, we kind of realize that we basically wasted a lot of hot air. But do you think there's a chance it could happen this year?
Well, Jeff, come on. No. And even people that I talked to yesterday that are in the know told me that, you know, every year it's the same thing. We're having discussions about it, but we feel like it's something that it can't happen. And I'm going to tell you why, okay? The playing field is the playing field. And I know it sounds strange, and people are talking about collusion. I don't believe that Gary Bettman ever said to one GM or all the GMs, don't ever do that, okay? I don't believe that ever happened. The rules are the rules, and the commissioner is not involved in any of this, okay? That being said, there's a kind of a unwritten rule between the GMs that you're not going to do that, okay? Can anybody say, you know what, I don't care about the unwritten rule. We're going all in on Mitch Marner. Okay, let's try this. But the impact of this is going to be really, really negative, I think, on the GM who's doing it. It happened before. I remember Shea Weber getting an offer sheet from the Flyers. And, you know, the day that they did that, yes, they did shock the world. Okay. Nashville was upset. That offer sheet was obviously matched by the Predators. But at one point, they had to trade Shea Weber because they were tired of giving $13, $10, $8 million every July 1st to Shea Weber. That's not against Shea Weber. It's just the structure of the contract was not obviously something that they liked at the end. But what happened is this. Paul Holmgren was the GM for the Flyers, okay? Two or three years after maximum, he had to resign. The reason that he resigned is not because, Jeff, that he didn't like his job. It's because nobody was taking his calls anymore.
Mm-hmm.
People were upset with him, okay? And when you're a GM and nobody's returning your call, you can't work anymore. You can't do your job. And he realized that for the sake of the Flyers, he had to move on. So do I believe that that's going to change in today's world that, the GMs are going to say, I don't care about what's going to happen next. I'm going to jeopardize my career by doing something like this. Probably there's a 90% chance that it's going to be matched by the Maple Leafs. The only way it's not going to be matched, it's because if the contract is over $14 million maybe per season, AAV. I mean, at the end, Jeff, you're risking too much. You're risking your reputation. You're risking your career for something that at the end of the day, it's just good for, the media. It's just good for probably the player involved, his agent. But is it really good for the sake of a franchise? I'm not convinced. So I talked to a lot of people yesterday about that. None told me that it's going to happen. None. So, and I'm not saying that it's impossible. Nothing is impossible in this world. But before you pull the trigger, Jeff, you better be ready. Because what's going to happen to you next, it's not going to be fun. That's the reality.
The NHL has expanded its video review rules. Essentially, Ren, it seems like it's actually sat down and looked at all the issues we saw in the playoffs and just kind of checked them off one after the other after the other. Do you like some of the changes that have been made?
Every changes.
Mm-hmm.
I like every changes. I think you have to tip your hat to the league, Jeff, because they reacted the right way. Instead of taking their time, thinking about it sometimes a little bit too much. You know what? We had discussions, you and I, about it over the playoffs. And one thing that we said is, you know, you need to help the referees. And today I'm pretty convinced that all the referees, they woke up with a big smile on their face because their life is going to be way easier. It's not going to be complicated. The only thing that's going to be complicated, from what I understand from Commissioner Bettman, is are the replays are going to come fast enough for the, you know, the referees, because obviously the broadcasters control those replays. Okay. It's not going to be like an offside or did the puck cross the line for goal, something like that, where the league has other angles than maybe we have. But that being said, I mean, in today's era, you can have replays after 5-6 seconds that a goal is scored. So I don't think it's going to be really complicated. I think the league is going in the right direction. The fact that we're not going to talk about it, you and I, maybe is probably going to be a great thing, because, like we mentioned, you know, we mentioned the game versus between the Sharks and the Blues that ended in overtime. We and there was a hand pass on the Carlson goal. We talk about that for maybe 20 minutes, but we should have talked about how great that game was. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now I think we're going to focus a little more on the quality of the game. The game's going to be better. And to be honest with you, the only thing that I think it's okay, but I don't really care, is a player who's losing his helmet and he needs to put his helmet back. I mean, I understand it's a security thing. It's all right. But it's kind of cool to see a player without his helmet on, still playing. Obviously, the last thing that you want to see is a player being injured. So I understand why the league is like that.
I know they've expanded coaches' challenges, but it's interesting. They've added a category, challenges and missed stoppages of play in an offensive zone leading to a goal.
Yeah.
But those are sort of black and white calls, right? Hand passes, puck and netting. They're not talking about missed penalties. I don't mind that. I would prefer that you don't give the coaches more challenges. But in this case, I don't mind giving coaches an expanded challenge if we're talking about goals. Okay, I don't mind that. I was concerned that there would be you would expand the challenge to other areas and create a system where coaches could use it to manipulate the clock and things like that. Like I think this is a little different. Plus, of course, second unsuccessful challenge is a double minor. If you're wrong, it's an automatic 2-minute penalty. No one wants to take a double minor penalty to stop the clock. I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
No, it's not going to happen. That being said, Jeff, and I just wish that one day it's going to come to this. Like, I don't like the fact that you need a challenge to see if there's a good goal or not. I think that it should be automatic. Like in the NFL, is it a touchdown or it's not a touchdown? Is it an interception or it's not? So, you know, I just wish that one day, because of technology, everything's going to be quicker. So the league's going to say to everybody, you know what, no more challenges. We're going to declare if a goal is a goal. Maybe it's going to take 30 seconds more, but not more than that. And we're going to make sure that a goal is a goal. But when you think about it, Jeff, I mean, I'm looking at when a team is scoring a goal right now, my God, it's long before they're throwing and putting the puck back on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
It could be easily a minute and a half before, obviously, the celebrations are over, before the league is giving the thumbs up that the goal is good. I mean, I don't see why you need to really take more time to say that's a good goal. I think the league at one point is going to be maybe more comfortable to say we're going to declare if the goal is good or not, and we don't need challenges with it. I don't think it's going to be more complicated at one point for the league.
Yeah, it's and the one thing I am quite happy about is I'm led to believe that Gary Bettman is really conscious of giving too many challenges. I've heard him say publicly that he is aware that you can let the genie out of the bottle, and once it's out, it's hard to get it back in. Ren, we appreciate you doing this as always, my friend. Enjoy your weekend.
No problem, and we just hope that one day, Jeff, baseball's going to be back in Montreal.
I've got a feeling it's going to be back 4 or 5 years.
All right.
We'll be down there. We'll be drinking beer at the Stad. We'll be drinking beer.
We'll be together, and it will be a great pleasure to have that beer with you. That's
all right.
For sure.
Take care, Ren.
Take care.
All righty. Ren LeVar, NHL insider with TVS Sports and the Journal de Montréal. I go drinking beer with Ren. The Blue Jays are on a magical misery tour. Boston, New York. Starts tonight. Fenway Park. Chris Sale against Trent Thornton. The Jays coming off a 7-5 win over the Angels. Billy McKinney walked it off in the 10th inning last night. Big story of the night. Kawhi Leonard showed up. Sat in the seats that Mark Shapiro used to sit in. And apparently talked to the bat boy for most of the night. And we do know that he videotaped Mike Trout's at-bats, which is kind of cool. The game itself, hey, the Blue Jays won. Clayton Richard kept it together long enough. Billy McKinney walked it off. Another good game for Lourdes Gurriel. But my goodness, my goodness, my goodness, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Not a good day in the field. Kevin Barker joins me. We'll talk some baseball. Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.